Healthy Everyday Foundation. Plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. You can make the air taste fresher, breathe as deeply as you please. You create a world of pleasure just by simply planting trees. Adding shade, creating beauty is just part of what they're worth. You make the world a better place with trees, protecting the good earth. Help the Arbor Day Foundation, plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. Plant a tree today for all the world to share.
This is Crystal Gale. Plant trees. For more information, go to arborday.org. You'll make a world of difference.
Global HR News on the air with Nadine Vogel. Nadine, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get into disability etiquette. I've never heard that before, but it makes total sense. And I think that a lot of our readers, our audience, I should say, around the world, needs to learn more about this. So how about giving us a little training from A, B, and C about disability about disability etiquette, okay?
Okay, you got it. So let's start with the example I gave, but I really didn't give the answer to it. Which is, you know, if we know what the right thing to do is, we'll do it. I do believe that. But so many mistakes that we make are just out of fear. We're not sure what the right thing to do or to say is. So an example, and again, this is no matter what country you're in. You meet someone, you're introduced to someone, or you're conducting an interview with someone who uses a wheelchair. The question is, should you sit, stand, or kneel during that conversation? So many folks say that you should kneel so that you're at eye level. And the eye level piece is accurate, but you don't want to kneel because typically you kneel down to children. So it's inappropriate to do that. And if you're like me, while you're kneeling, your knees start to go, and then you grab onto the wheelchair so you don't fall. And that's also inappropriate because the wheelchair is actually the extension of that person's body, of their personal space. So the most appropriate thing to do is to find a stool or a chair or something that you can sit on, lean on, so that you are at eye level without actually kneeling down.
But doesn't this show preference or embarrassment or catering to?
No, this actually just shows appropriateness and respect. And here's why. Because if you kneel down, it is being disrespectful because we do kneel down to children. If you stand, you know, if you have someone in a wheelchair and let's say you're 6 feet tall and you're standing, it's very uncomfortable for that person to have that conversation because they're going to have to really strain their neck to look up to you. So it's really just about appropriateness and respect. You know, in the U.S., when we greet someone or meet someone, we go and shake hands, typically right hand to right hand. So if you go to shake someone's hand when you're introduced and they have a prosthetic device, a hook perhaps, instead of a hand, typically you don't know what to do. But it would be to shake that hook or that prosthetic device. If there's no hand, the arm ends perhaps at the wrist, then shake that forearm, again, right to right. If for some reason the person extends their left hand or left arm instead, then you go with what they're extending. And again, it's just out of appropriateness and respect.
This is cool. Okay. So all this is logical once you hear it, but is there a website or a book or something people can read?
Absolutely. The Springboard website is www.consultspringboard.com, all one word, and there's a lot of information there. And then we have a book coming out October 1st entitled Dive In, and it's all about really learning the productivity, profitability, and productivity of really this segment of the population in the workplace, but giving very, very useful tools on how to handle whether it's etiquette and awareness or recruiting or training or accommodations. And the beauty of the book, and it is available now on, I think it's BarnesandNoble.com, is that We interviewed about 18 executives from global corporations who were able to share best practice. You asked earlier about some best practices. They actually shared their best practice or tool relative to their best practice in each of these areas. And so, you know, you're done reading that book. It's not just theory. It's really, okay, so I can call this person who's listed in the book, and they can explain to me more how they're doing it. And so it's going to be very, very useful for taking it, running, and go. Go start doing. And to me, that's a successful book.
Let me ask you a question, then, about describing a best practice. Okay, I'd like you to describe what Cisco does, if you name one example. And then, after describing that briefly to us, Nadine, tell me, what about a next practice, an innovation beyond today's or yesterday's best practice?
Okay. Well, I think in terms of best practices, if you want to consider, you know, what a company is doing, I think what I would start thinking about, so we talk about Cisco, and that's probably a perfect example. Their interest was around recruiting, and recruiting in a variety of countries simultaneously, and they do a lot of on-campus recruiting as well as through organizations, but they really wanted to ensure that they were also recruiting to people with disabilities. And we're really unsure in how to do that. And so we were able to set up a program for them where we were able to identify which schools, which colleges or universities, and in which countries had programs specifically geared to support students with disabilities and at the same time matched up with specialties in majors that they were looking for relative to the positions they had open. And then we set up a process whereby they could go directly to those departments' career services and as opposed to just general and then not find those students. And so it was a very targeted, comprehensive way of integrating what they were already doing, college campus recruiting for certain majors, but integrating disability in a very seamless way. It enabled them to eliminate so many steps that they otherwise would have taken.
Now, this is a best practice.
Correct.
Okay, now what would you recommend a next practice to be? This is, I know, this is extemporaneous thinking now, I know. But what would you call a next practice? What should they do better?
Well, I think, and I won't speak to Cisco specifically, I think that when I look at all the best practices that are out there, whether for supporting employees with disabilities and or employees who have dependents with disabilities, I think the next best practice is to really not just on the side that's the employee with the dependent, with the child with a disability, is to not just provide services, but really educate themselves in the corporations on how to understand and deliver on the unique needs of this segment of their employee population. Let me explain what I mean by that. In that special needs parent population, for example, there is upwards of an 80% divorce rate. It is a very high stress environment. Therefore, we have a lot of single parents. We have these folks in the workplace with very unique stressors, very unique situations that as managers we don't understand, and we don't understand the implications of those stressors to the job, to their daily job. So as an example, you know, if someone is a single parent, they have a child who has severe autism, and let's say that child is 13. And on the team is another individual who just had a new baby, no problem. And both employees go to the manager and say, you know, we really need some flex time. And one says, because I have a new baby, and the other says, well, I have this 13-year-old. Typically, the manager, because of their level of understanding and awareness, is going to better understand the person with a newborn baby. Wow, you definitely need flex time. I get it. I have a baby. I understand how that is. And is going to give it to that person first. And all of that, because what they don't understand is that what we call exceptional caregiving, which is caregiving of someone with a disability, actually gets more intense and more strenuous as the child gets older, which is really atypical for a traditional caregiving scenario. So it's very hard for the manager to understand that the person with the 13-year-old with autism actually has more of a need, perhaps, for the flex time than the person with the newborn baby. That would be a next practice, to understand that next level and how it applies to work life and work life initiatives within a company.
Work life meaning?
Work life balance, being most productive at work so that they can be where they need to be when they're home with the child, and not when they're home with the child be worried about work, and when they're at work worried about how they're going to handle things with the child. We want fully engaged, productive employees.
Yeah, right. Just, well, as much normalcy as possible, whatever normal means.
Well, the beauty of this, though, is because these folks have such stressors and such needs, if you show how you can support and understand those unique needs, they will become your most loyal, super productive employees. These are people that learn multitasking in ways you can never imagine. And they really, if they get that support, they will be loyal, they will be engaged beyond anybody's wildest dreams.
Yeah. So, Nadine, this is just fascinating. We have another commercial to get in now, and we'll be right back. We're talking with Nadine Vogel, and we're going to revisit the idea of marketing products and services to this community. And you mentioned earlier, because of the disability, not in spite of it. And boy, that intrigues me, because I am also into marketing. Okay, it's Ed Cohen. Global HR News is on the air with Global People and Global Business. We'll be right back.